Hello, everyone. Welcome to Executive Report. Today, we'll be talking with John Minidakis from Jimmy's Famous Seafood, and he's going to tell us about his whole journey from how he started in the business to how he's made it where he is, and maybe some of the local successes he had with some of the local sports teams. So before I get started, let me read a quick little bio. That way, you have some information about him. So John Minidakis is the co-owner and operator of Jimmy's Famous Seafood, which is widely considered to be one of the state's most iconic restaurants. I can agree. I've been there many times. The restaurant recently entered into the home stadiums of the Washington Nationals, the Aberdeen Ironbirds, Baltimore Ravens, and most recently the Baltimore Orioles, you know, with their iconic crab cakes. You know, John was born and raised in Baltimore, living on top of the restaurant in an apartment until his mid-20s. He's a proud alum of Loyola Blakefield's middle school and high school programs, where he became a don before graduating from Loyola University. Most recently, John's made headlines for funding the Famous Fund, a nonprofit which raised over $500,000 to aid his fellow restaurant owners during the COVID lockdowns. So to date, John's helped over 30 restaurants, and they've received a lot of financial assistance and help in COVID. So, John, welcome to Executive Report.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I don't know if you believe in fate or if you believe in, you know, higher powers or anything like that, but I believe that in some cases, people are really custom made for certain situations. And when I think about you and your story and the adversity and how you've overcome so many things, I honestly believe that maybe you are custom made for what you're doing today. And I don't know if anyone else could have succeeded the way you have. So I know that you grew up above the restaurant, and I know that it was a family business, obviously still is. But what was it like when you were a kid living above the restaurant and going in and out of the kitchen and those things?
Yeah, it was definitely unique, obviously, growing up on top of a bar and restaurant with my brothers and in a great era to grow up. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s was a really good time to be a kid. So a lot of great stories, as you can imagine. Obviously, anytime we were hungry, we just went downstairs and yeah, you can get shrimp or a crab cake. That's that's pretty good living right there. But it's just made sure that we knew why we were able to have some of the nice things that we had, because all you had to do was walk downstairs, you know, down 15 flights of steps or 15 steps rather, and watch your parents working and grinding, you know, every day, 7 days a week. And you realize, you know, the value of hard work, and that nothing happens by accident, that you have to work for everything. And it really just, you know, humbled us, obviously taught us the value of friendship, taught us great people skills, obviously, just getting to meet hundreds of different people a day from all walks of life and all backgrounds. And it's just something that I would never trade. I think it's probably, you know, one of the most important things in my life that ever happened to me, obviously, and my brothers. Just really keeps us grounded, yeah, for sure.
So, and you know, you go to the restaurant now, and it's this, you know, huge building, this big successful business. But I know it wasn't always that way. I think you said you were 19 when your dad passed. Your brother was 16, and there were some pretty hard times, you know. That happened, and obviously you overcame all those things. But I mean, what was the, I guess you could say, the biggest challenges? Like, I think it was the first 10 years, you said, when you took over?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're teenagers, basically, taking over a pretty established business, it's you're walking that line between thinking you know everything and in actuality really just knowing nothing. So the most difficult part, without a doubt, was just learning on the fly, and every decision that we made had massive ramifications because we didn't get the training wheels. We didn't get to be wrong. When we were wrong, and we were wrong often, you know, there was pretty bad fallout because now you're falling behind on your bills, and there's overdraft fees, and, you know, Verizon's cutting the lines, and I mean, I can go on and on, but that was definitely the most difficult part, obviously, is just not getting a practice swing, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, did you have any mentors or help, anyone to help at the time?
You know, obviously my biggest mentor was my father, and just not having him around, that was the most difficult part. And, you know, even when he was around, he was like a man of very, very, very few words. So he would lead by example. So while he was showing us how it's done, he didn't always verbalize it.
Got it.
So, you know, and, you know, Philip Rizas, who was another restaurateur, a friend of my father's, he owned Finn's and a couple other great places locally. He helped us out a lot, obviously. And there's other people that, you know, did help out, but just, it wasn't, unless you lived it, you know, it was just very, very hard. And we just kind of had to figure out on our own, and we just had to have each other's back. And I speak frequently about you don't have to meet somebody for them to be your mentor. So, you know, I looked to people like Roy Williams, you know, I looked to people like Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Michael Jordan, and I just grabbed something from each person that I thought I admired and I wanted to incorporate into the man that I was becoming. And as you mentioned earlier, attending Loyola Blakefield just really set me down the right path and just kept my faith at the forefront. Just let me know that, you know, no matter how bad things were getting, that, you know, there was a greater plan that was going to come together, whether I was seeing it at the time or not. And just having that Loyola community behind me and constantly reaching out to me and checking on me, despite not getting my parents' tuition dollars anymore because we had already graduated, really meant a lot to me at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The idea of walking by faith, not by sight, is hard for a lot of people. And yeah, kudos to you for being able to get past those things. So, you know, when all that was said and done, now you look back at it and you think, you know, that's in the past. Were there any really big learning moments, though?
Gosh, you know, I think every day is a learning moment, honestly. It's just, you want to get better every day.
Yeah.
I don't believe in staying the same. I think either you're getting better or you're getting worse. And not only in the business sense, but, you know, spiritually, mentally, physically, you just want to make sure that you're becoming a better person when you go to bed than when you woke up that day. Yeah. You only get so many hours in the day. You got to make them count. You got to make every minute count, every interaction. And at the end of the day, those things add up. Consistency, I think, has always been key. And, you know, when we spoke last week, it was just a very difficult balance for me to figure out if they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing every day and expecting a different result. But we also, as a culture, as a country, value consistency and hard work. So where's the balance? If I'm trying so hard every day, but things aren't turning around, am I insane or am I going to at some point break through? And I think everybody's got to find that balance in their life. And I mean, I don't know when it happened, you know, in my life, but, you know, somewhere along the way, you know, things did turn around and you know, we were able to financially turn a profit and the name, you know, was getting out there more and just things started going a lot better than they used to. But there's never success overnight, no matter what field you're in, no matter what business you're in. And we just kept plugging away. And, you know, looking back, there wasn't one moment. I don't know. There's been some highlights along the way, obviously, but I just think if sticking to your morals and sticking to your guns and knowing who you are and what you value and displaying it, not just saying it, it'll get you to where you want to be eventually.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Simon Sinek, who does a lot of talks about running a business, and he says it's very similar to falling in love. It's not like you wake up one morning and say, oh, I'm going to fall in love today. It's the process. And then all of a sudden you realize, hey, I'm in love with this person. And he says running a business is very similar in that you do the process and you keep going, and then all of a sudden you look back and you say, wow, we've really accomplished something great. So yeah, I completely understand.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll just go through my old photos on my cell phone or on our social media platforms, or I'll find folders of old pictures, and it's just it's amazing to see how far you've come. And there's an expression, a lot of people, what is it? Stop going where they want to go because they don't realize how far they've come. And I think it's great to reflect frequently. And you know, I have a Kairos journal where I just write my thoughts and what I'm thankful for each day. And even if you look back, not 3 years, but 3 weeks, you can see how far you've come in life, and just really give thanks and be appreciative and thankful for everything that you have in your life that, you know, you would have done so much for just months and years ago. So it just, it keeps everything in perspective. And I think that's what keeps, I think, successful people in line, is knowing that you've accomplished and attained things that you always wanted to have, but you have to cherish those too once you had them. You can't just say, okay, I don't want this toy anymore and throw it back. That's what brats do, right?
That's right. That's right. So you mentioned looking back, and one of the things you said is you look back at your social media platforms. So that leads me right into the war with PETA, right? So I remember it very distinctly. I remember seeing the billboards, and I remember some four-letter words coming out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I drove past it, and I didn't give it a second thought. You had a completely different reaction, I think. Maybe there were some four-letter words mm-hmm. as well, but you took action. So can you tell us a little bit about why it hit you so personally?
Well, I mean, obviously, they're attacking the industry that we're in.
Yeah.
And PETA's a pretty big name, obviously. And a lot of people, when I asked around and when I looked around, I said, you know, we have to fight back at some point. We can't just take this. Yeah. As I talked to the fellow bar owners, restaurant owners, and they were like, you know, I just really don't want to pick a fight with them, of all people. So I did it on my own. I put out some stats, obviously, the whole glass house thing.
Yep.
And lo and behold, Pete is not the perfect company that a lot of people at the time thought they were. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest mistake they made was responding, obviously. And I didn't think that they knew who they were picking a fight with. They probably thought we were some, you know, huge corporation at the time, which we weren't. Instead of a family business, which we had a lot to lose, obviously.
Yeah.
So we stood our ground, going back to what I said originally. And I was never scared.
Yeah.
I knew who we were. I knew who our customers were. I knew who our employees were. And I knew that them picking on us, no matter what their financial capabilities were, it wasn't going to change who we are. And if somebody did get offended or didn't like, you know, our abrasive tone, I don't think that they were ever going to be a customer anyway.
Fair enough.
Which I learned at a very, very early age, that I saw a Nike exec said it once, that the people who complain about your product the most were never going to be your customers. And I believe that.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in that. And there's definitely exceptions. You know, if you do cross the line, you know, you might turn people off, but I don't think we were doing anything to cross the line at the time. I think we were standing our ground, and we were defending all the crabbers in Maryland, the busboys who depend on the crab meat to be sold to make their tips, and so on and so on. And when it began going viral in a positive fashion, all of a sudden the people that I asked to help me out on this venture and declining me at first, they were like, hey, man, you know, if you want, you know, a partner. And I was like, nah, man, you know, we went into this on our own, and we're going to finish this on our own too.
Yeah. Did you expect all that national news coverage?
Absolutely not. I don't, you know, it's in marketing, and, you know, being in our industry, we're definitely in the marketing game too. You just never know.
Yeah.
There's been times where I would post like a beautiful photo or a certain celebrity, and I'd be like, oh man, this is going to take off, and, you know, 7 or 8 likes. And then there's other times where, it's like, you know, you just throw it up because it looks okay. You think somebody will like it, and, you know, it goes viral. And
right.
This was definitely one of those examples. It was towards the end of the summer. You know, we're getting ready for football season.
Mm-hmm.
People are still on their final vacation, and here comes PETA, and they just kind of gave us this layup. So to me, it was a no-brainer. There was never any doubt in my mind that we had to defend our livelihood.
Yeah.
You know, to them, it may have been tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, turning people off from how we feed our families, it's not a joke to me. It's still not a joke to me all these years later. And that's why I think people are always quick to tag Jimmy's into a conversation when PETA is attacking farmers in the Midwest or our fishermen on the West Coast or whatever, you know, their case may be. And, you know, we're more than happy to, you know, lend a helping hand in their war.
Mm-hmm.
But you can never back down. And it was definitely a David and Goliath story, looking back at it. And the most important thing is, I think it helped the brand. I think it identified who we are, who we want to be. And it brought so many new eyes onto our little, you know, family restaurant. And we have people driving here from Montana, from Alaska, from Hawaii, from Florida, just to eat there, right, because they respected what we were doing. And these are relationships that we still have to this day. And I'm very hands-on, and I want to meet everybody. And I respond to the emails, I respond to the texts, I respond to the comments, and I just let them know how much we appreciate it, because they're helping us keep the very doors that PETA tried to shut open.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting you mentioned David and Goliath, because I know that story very well. And one of the interesting things about King David is he ran to the battle. You know, he wasn't afraid of it. And I think you are very similar. When this happened with PETA, you ran to the front. Mm-hmm. You wanted to get involved right away. And the same thing happened when COVID hit. Everyone was struggling, especially in the restaurant industry within Baltimore City. And you ran to the front lines and said, we got to help. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole genesis of the Famous Fund. So talk about that. Why does it mean so much to you?
Just, I guess, going back to, as I mentioned, my teachings in middle school and high school, you know when something's right. And yeah, I knew this was the right thing to do. And I just felt that everything that I had gone through in life, my education, my upbringing, my mentality just brought me to this moment. It felt that this was what I was built for. This is why God put me here on this earth. And just being able to use our large social media following and some of the celebrities that we knew at the time to really shine light on what was going on, I really felt verified that, and the immediate success of it really proved that to me. And that's what kept us going. And that's why I didn't mind, not that I sleep as it is, but sleeping even less than usual. And, you know, responding to Marcus Lemonis at 3 or 4 in the morning to help these bars and these restaurants get the funding that they needed to stay open. It was a no-brainer to me, because we got lucky. And that's the only word I can use, is there was no playbook for COVID, right?
No.
So who knew what the rules were going to be? And unfortunately, the restaurant industry did become vilified as an extent of that. And looking back, even, you know, a few months and years later, it's comical, right? But these other restaurants didn't have a built-in carryout like we had. These other restaurants didn't have food trucks like we had. They didn't have online shipping capabilities like we had. They didn't have the hundreds of thousands of followers that can buy T-shirts online that we had.
Yeah.
And those things, they weren't there because I knew COVID was coming. They just happened to be there because it's part of our business model.
Yeah.
And to watch these 50, 60, 70-year-old people that worked their entire lives to build this vision, this brand, and to have it taken away from them through no fault of their own, I mean, I wasn't going to sit around and let that happen.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing thing you've done. Like I said, it's raised over $500,000. You've helped 30 plus restaurants. So I think the effect and the legacy of that dog in a fight kind of mentality, I think it's going to last a really long time. And when you think about the legacy, and when you think about where you are in your life now, what do you think Jimmy's will be like in 10 years from now, or 15, or what do you want it to be like at the very least?
I just want it to be what my dad built. You know, it's an old school, blue collar immigrant restaurant, and we roll our sleeves up and we work. You know, we take a lot of pride in what we do. We're very steadfast in our beliefs. We're going to give back to the community every day. We're going to have fun at work. But at the end of the day, it's family. And we preach family. We live family. And family doesn't just mean the people that we work with. It means the people that we serve as well. Yeah. People are starting to call it a tourist destination, which is comical because it's not in the best part of town. You know, it's in Dundalk, which people always want to make fun of and we're always quick to defend. But to call that a tourist destination, you know, to me is pretty funny now, because, you know, if that's the knock that you have on us, then so be it. But, you know, if that tourist, quote unquote, does come in, they're going to become part of the family right away. And I love just walking the parking lot sometimes and just looking at the license plates and seeing North Carolina and Florida and Pennsylvania, obviously Maryland and Virginia. And it's just like, I got to go talk to every table. I got to see where they're from, how they heard about us, and make them feel welcome here. Give them a T-shirt, give them a hat, give them dessert, whatever the case may be, and just grow that family. So, you know, hopefully in 10 years, you know, my brother's kids, and hopefully when we start having kids are in that restaurant, and, you know, they're going to tables, busting them, and learning the value of hard work. And we'll keep it going for as long as we can, because I think many people are familiar with the stats.
Yeah.
They don't usually make it down the generation in any business. And we love it. It's all we do. It's all we've ever done. And it's all we ever want to do, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hear a story of determination, of hard work. And in my opinion, the most important part, faith and belief. And not willingness, or no willingness to allow fear to affect your next decision. So, you know, we're coming towards the end of the interview, but, you know, I got to ask one last thing. So you're working with the Ravens, you're working with the Orioles. Any predictions on the Orioles schedule this year?
Gosh, you know, I haven't put much thought in it. There's a positivity around the clubhouse for sure that I've seen around the front office. So, you know, if they do exceed expectations, I won't be surprised. You know, one thing's for sure, the product on the field will probably get better, but, you know, the food off the field, I can guarantee it'll get better.
The food is definitely going to be better.
You know, one thing that I'll say about the Orioles, though, is it's, you know, they have not had a ton of success lately, but I don't feel like it's really affected the fan base's loyalty. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks volumes about Baltimore and just the people that live in Baltimore. And we're very loyal. We're very loyal people. And when we love something, we are very passionate about it. And in this case that we're speaking of now, it's the Orioles, but I've experienced it many times, you know, during COVID when they had our backs, during PETA when they had our backs. There's just nothing like, you know, that scrappiness around here.
That's for sure. So everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you hit the like button, the subscribe, and share the video as well. John, it's a pleasure to have you as always.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.